This episode of Apple at Work is sponsored by Muzzle. Deploying, managing, and protecting Apple devices at work shouldn't be difficult or require several solutions. Muzzle is the only Apple unified platform for business. By combining enhanced device management, endpoint security, internet privacy and security, single sign-on, and enhanced app management into a single Apple-only platform, businesses can now easily and automatically deploy, manage, protect their Apple devices automatically with one solution at an affordable price. With a solution for every business size and the best support in the market, start a free 30-day trial and see firsthand why Muzzle is more than an Apple MDM. Muzzle is everything you need to work with Apple. To learn more, visit business.mozle.com. That's business.mozle.com. Thanks to Mozle for sponsoring Apple at Work this week.
Welcome to Apple at Work, the podcast all about Apple and the enterprise. My name is Bradley Chambers, your host. As always, this week on the show, we have a first-time guest welcoming Bernie Thompson, the CTO and co-founder of Pluggable. Bernie, hey, welcome to Apple at Work.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
So give us, if we got a lot we want to talk about, but obviously if our listeners are not familiar with Pluggable, can you give us that like 40,000 foot view of what you all make and what problems you're solving for people using Apple in the enterprise?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, really excited to talk about Apple and multiple displays because it's such an interesting topic. But it's interesting to me in particular because so I started my career working at IBM and Microsoft on basically display technologies and USB. And then as the world kind of shifted to USB, I thought, well, you know, could we build a better device company that does some of this stuff right, you know, that other people don't get right? And so in 2009, I started the brand Pluggable. And we're known for our laptop docking stations. We also have a complete line of other USB peripherals. You can find our products kind of all over the place. And, you know, this providing great multiple display solutions for Mac is really a big part of what we do. And because it's so challenging, I think we're going to talk about that. We have a whole team of people here in North America, a customer support team that provides support for our products. And a lot of that support is for the kind of Mac use cases we're going to talk about, I think.
Well, and the thing I've realized, I've been in IT for 20 some odd years, but and certainly like the last 10, just because something is a dock does not mean it works well. And I think anybody listening to this show has realized you're like, you know, come down to your Mac setup and, you know, something's not working right. And a lot of times it is the dock and, you know, not talking bad about any one company, but like the truth is that certainly in the modern Apple ecosystem, when you're really, you know, this is long past like, hey, I have one USB-A port on my computer and I want four. Like we're long past those days. This is like when you really, these docks today are in some ways like the command center for your desk. And, you know, we would often think, no, it's the Mac. It's like, well, you think about how everything, depending on your use case, depending on your monitor setup, depending on, you know, what you're connecting to, the number of peripherals you have, a bad dock can really throw your entire computing world, you know, into chaos. And I imagine that's somewhat of like what you all are trying to solve is like, hey, we're trying to make docks that work reliably. Cause I think that's a challenge. If you go to, you know, random website and order a dock for your Mac, like you can get some stuff like, you know, under $20, but you know, who knows if it works right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the reasons behind that, and we can kind of break them down a little bit, but you know, some of it is just straight off bad hardware. You know, there's always a race to the bottom a bit with electronics, and which results in great pricing, but also those $20 traps you talked about. But, you know, that's actually the smaller part of the problem. The other part of the problem is we've kind of got this magic cable, USB-C, you know, that does it all. But actually, behind that single connector is hiding a whole bunch of different underlying technologies. And some of those work well on Mac. Some of them work kind of, and others don't work at all. And, you know, we kind of expect this plug-and-play simplicity that if we buy something that's USB-C or Thunderbolt, it doesn't matter what system we have, it'll all just work. But that fact that there are different underlying technologies means that's not true. It actually matters which dock you pick. You need to pick one that is using a set of technologies that's compatible with your Mac. You know, and then we have some of the other kind of fundamental, kind of confusing limitations, you know, like the you know, up until things are really good now with the M4 Max, but kind of prior to the M4 Max, you had this situation from M1 to M3 where Thunderbolt is really one of its whole purposes for existence is to be a technology with enough throughput to support two displays. But unfortunately, the base Max from M1 to M3 only supported a single display. And that was very confusing for people because you had all these peripherals that were saying, hey, you know, two HDMI ports, connect that. But it didn't work on the base Max. But now that's all resolved here with M4, where two displays, kind of the full promise of Thunderbolt, works on all of the M4 line.
That was a very confusing time period because you really had to decide. I mean, again, this was like late 2020 because Apple released what was the Air and the iMac originally. And it was very like you had to decide like, well, if I wanted multiple displays, you had to stick with Intel, or if I wanted Apple Silicon, it was like you were kind of limited. Now, obviously, there were some solutions that came in the short term of like, you know, where you could use a USB output. And obviously, like those were fine and those worked. And frankly, I would rather use that kind of setup than using Intel. That kind of like once I went Apple Silicon, there was no moving back to Intel. But that was very confusing because we kind of, but it, you know, if you think about like a major architecture, that was the MVP of Apple Silicon. It's like, we're going to get something out and we'll fix it later. But I do think, you know, something you're talking about, like the Thunderbolt, it reminds me of just the worst thing with technology is when things don't always work or they don't always break. That's the absolute worst. Like it's sort of like Ethernet cables. You would rather have an Ethernet cable that didn't work at all, or an Ethernet cable that like was working all the time. The worst is when you're like, it's intermittent. You're like, well, where's the problem? And I think that's the challenge of like when you kind of get those bargain basement solutions, it might work 90% of the time, but that 10% of the time, like what is that time worth to you? Then you even just from a reliability standpoint, if you've got USB hard drives plugged in, that can actually, you know, cause disconnects and you could be looking at damage, you know, in the future. But like you said, the M4, it's taken a couple of years. We're finally at a really healthy space. One of the places, you know, I've been using the app ProPresenter for, you know, going back 15 years, if not longer. And it's been really interesting to see, you know, that was traditionally something that was only used in churches when they released it, but it's really morphed into this massive presentation software with a lot of cool use cases. And you're seeing the Mac be really a great product in those event facilities when they have those massive screens. And I imagine just, you know, that's where that reliability matters of having the right kind of docking solution in place and where you can absolutely not go cheap, you know, on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's funny where the going cheap part of it has the biggest impact. Like actually where we see the biggest impact is actually on cabling. You know, the USB-C cable, again, this what appears to be this somewhat magic technology, you know, connects anything with the USB-C connector. There's actually a lot of complexity in there. You've got 24 different lines of mix of mostly data, some power. Two different power systems really in there. And then you've got chips inside every good USB cable. That's actually one of the issues is for cost down. Sometimes those chips are removed and then that ends up capping the capability that can be run through that cable. And so we've never really had this prior to USB-C where the cable itself is really a piece of electronics with quite a lot of intelligence and quite a lot of ways of messing that up. And so, one of the things, you know, our mantra kind of internally is better products, better information, better support. So the better support part is that, you know, that North American support team, the better information part, a lot of that is saying this stuff out loud, like correctly describing what works and what doesn't work and being willing to describe both. One of the funny things about the information, if you go look at pluggable.com or look at a pluggable product, you know, on Amazon or on a reseller website is we spend a lot of time talking about it's not for this, you know, it's good for this, it's not for this. But then the better product side of it, a lot of that is, well, there's kind of two aspects about it. One is this issue of kind of baseline quality. You know, we're probably spending, I don't know, 25 to 50 cents more probably on every cable than our average competitor is. But the benefit of that is eliminating a lot of those cases, you know, you were just talking about, Bradley, where you get this kind of quirky behavior the system's capable of working, but because of this bad cable, you've got a problem. And even when we have service incidents and we end up kind of sending replacement stuff, about a quarter of the time, it's just it's a replacement cable that ends up solving the issue. So USB-C's complexity and kind of, you got 40 gigabits per second running over this cable. You have a lot of desire on the part of all of us, to have longer cables. Thunderbolt, the first 40 gig, version of Thunderbolt was Thunderbolt 3. When that came out, we were at half meter cables. Today, we've got 1 meter cables that are passive and then two and more that are what are called active cables that have repeaters. There's actually a lot of technology involved just to get an extra half meter on your cable because of this really high throughput data going over it. And so as you have this a little bit of a race to the bottom on pricing, people make compromises. And the result is those frustrations that you're talking about. And then the other half of what we do, on the technology side is we support all of our products directly with that North American team. And so we get to see what's really causing problems for people. And we basically are every generation of our product, we're trying to purge that stuff from our products. So, we launched a dock today. Everybody wanted the same thing. They wanted more USB-C ports that do it all, and they wanted more, at least two HDMI ports. And so we have a new dock today, and it's the second one that achieves that kind of spec of at least three do it all USB-C ports, and then two HDMI displays. But it was really hard to get there. We had to really push and innovate and combine technologies. We actually combined Thunderbolt and DisplayLink in order to get that. And most other people in the industry are not thinking that hard about what the frustrations of the customers are and kind of pushing. And that's what we try to do. We try to push and eliminate frustration.
You all have I'm going to have it in the show notes, a link that I was reading before the show that I think every IT person should bookmark. It's the IT Buyer's Guide to Docking Stations. Because I do think there is a lot of variables. So if you've got a team and you're like, okay, well, this group of employee gets the Air, well, this group of employee gets the Pro. There's just a lot of variability there, particularly if you're trying to power the laptop off of the dock. If you've got a laptop with a discrete GPU, well, that's going to require a different level of power. And in some ways, that's the dream. That's the dream of the dock is that you've got one cable to rule them all. And that's what everybody ultimately wants when they come into either the home office or their actual office is they put their laptop down, they plug it in, they've got their battle station up, they've got all the things. That's the dream. Getting there is often hard. And so I do think this buyer's guide is super relevant. And it's one of those, if you're not somebody, it's very compact. It's a lot of bullet points. It's just things you need to know that, and again, just even the Ethernet's one of them. So if you've got somebody that's trying to use, faster Ethernet than just gigabit, well, then there's a different dock for that. Cause you obviously, even if your Mac supports higher, well, if the dock is limited to a certain speed, well, then the whole system's going to be bottlenecked to that. So it's a really, really good article. Just to kind of just think through your different classes of employee, depending on what they get, are going to need different support on docks. Again, for power, for different use cases. And again, I love USB-C. It's absolutely fantastic. I've realized I'm probably not in the next 10 years going to be a place where my whole life is only USB-C. And I do think it's great that Apple has kind of realized that and has kind of gone back and has added some more cables for us. But I do think even if I have all USB-C accessories and devices, even on the monitor side, having a dock just makes it easier to hide your cables. And even if you're in a situation where you kind of have hotel desks where hey, we've got, just got cubicles, people sit down, that does make that a much seamless experience. If you've got a dock that you can trust, just sit down, it's one cable in, get all your monitors, get, external drives, get Ethernet from it. That's kind of the dream. So this buyer's guide is super relevant. It's a good bookmark as you kind of think through what docks need to go with what types of users.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and because USB-C can do it all, you want you want a peripheral that does do it all. One cable to get me my power, to get me my monitors, and to get me my legacy connections, and to get, to some degree, my charging of all the devices I have, like phones and stuff like that. Yeah, and that's what, that's the purpose in life of a dock. And like you say, the right dock for each system is slightly different. So if you're an IT manager and you're having to purchase for a whole organization, you kind of got two directions you can go. You can, be thinking about all of the individual systems that your different users have and kind of be going up spec and matching the perfect dock to each of those systems. And that's a great kind of mindset. And we've got that buyer's guide. We've got a ton of resources on pluggable.com, including a not a dumb AI chatbot, a really innovative AI chatbot that actually will know about the Mac. As you talk about specific Mac models, it'll actually understand and recommend right docs for you. And then there's another direction for the IT person to go, which is that they want to buy one dock across the organization, even though it's a variety of Macs and maybe even some Windows systems in the mix. And we have probably the widest dock line in the industry. I mean, definitely wider than any of the big PC brands, for example. And part of the reason we have that is so we can provide options. If you go up in functionality and kind of really try to tailor a dock to a system, we want to have that dock, and we do. And if you want to actually go down and pick a simpler dock, but one that will work the same on all your systems, we can do that too. This dock that we're launching today is an interesting kind of middle ground between that. It can deliver 5 displays on any Mac back to the M1s that we were talking about. Well, how in the world does it do that? Well, it's not using Thunderbolt, because if it did, then the M1, M2, M3 one of those displays would not work. But all of those Macs support what's called USB-C alt mode, or DisplayPort over USB-C. So we use that for one of the displays, and then we use a technology called DisplayLink, which is a software-based display for 4 of the displays. And so we get a total of 5, and it works on every Mac, regardless of year or generation. And so then that's a good example of, as long as all your systems are USB-C, that can be a great dock to deploy across the enterprise. It may not, you're going to have some users go, why don't I have Thunderbolt? Because I want the absolute best for my Mac. You're making a compromise where you're saying, well, we're going to get a dock that's going to work on every system in the company. And that's a great choice. And if you want to, for your engineering department or your CAD department or whoever, to get a Thunderbolt dock, well, we have those too. And you can get a Thunderbolt dock for them. So it's our goal. We know this isn't easy to find these proper matches for an IT buyer for organization. So between our content and, I love opportunities like this to talk, talk with 9to5 Mac and Apple at Work. And, we try to get out as much information as we can, to help people make these decisions.
You mentioned DisplayLink, and obviously that was a solution people have used for years. Has that technology, is it advanced, over the years where it feels much more native than it used to?
I think the underlying technology is really still the same. It's a virtual graphics technology where your GPU sees all these displays internally in its memory, but they're not physically connected. And so then the software that DisplayLink runs is looking in those frame buffers, looking at what's changing, and then sending that over USB. And then on the hardware side of the equation, there's another frame buffer, and they're basically updating that memory of what the screen is. And then out of that memory, out on the device, you're refreshing your screen. So there's this kind of virtual hop with the DisplayLink technology, which makes it extremely flexible. It's a technology that even Macs that only support one external display can support more with DisplayLink. You can connect DisplayLink devices in anywhere in your USB topology. Whereas like Thunderbolt or a DisplayPort over USB-C graphics adapter, you generally need to plug those directly into your laptop. DisplayLink, you could have that like off a dock, which has a hub off of it, and then you connect the DisplayLink and it all works. So the way the technology works is still the same. And that requires a driver, which you got to install. And then all the recent versions of macOS, there's kind of this annoying security dialogue that says, this driver wants to screen capture your screen. And they may be, this is a privacy issue, and they may be able to, see the contents of your screen. And it's a very confusing dialogue, but that is how the DisplayLink software is able to see what's changing. It doesn't go anywhere else. It just goes out to your device, but it's been thrown from a security perspective and privacy perspective under the screen sharing, and you have to approve that. And that step, because it's a little confusing, I mean, we really communicate that hard to make sure people understand they've got to install the software, and then they've got to approve this kind of confusing screen sharing, because the technology can't work without that. But one of the things that's happened in recent years is, to your question, is it feels like the technology's working better. And the reason why is just simply because the GPUs have gotten faster and the CPUs have gotten faster. So the amount of workload on your system to drive even 4 displays is, small compared to the capability of today's processors. You're generally, even with everything updating on every display, you're only consuming maybe 10 or 20% of your CPU. And part of the DisplayLink trick is, if you've got a display sitting there with a web page up and nothing is changing, literally nothing is happening. No data is going over the USB wire, and there's no load on your system. And so, it's leveraging the fact that it's very, if you know how these technologies work under the hood, it's a ton of data to refresh a screen if you're refreshing every pixel, whatever your refresh rate is, 60 or 144 times a second. But that's not how DisplayLink works. Between the computer and the DisplayLink device, it's only sending data if something has changed. And then it's only between the device and the monitor where you have that kind of constant refreshing at a very high data rate. So it's a pretty cool technology, pretty efficient. I actually worked at DisplayLink 15 years ago was one of the executives there for a while developing the technology. And I mean, I'm a big fan of very flexible technology.
Well, and that's what you want with here. It's like you want to have different options for different use cases. And I think that's, I think that's the goal. I mean, it's in some ways no different than like virtualization has come such a long way, and it's not the virtualization technology. It's gotten better, but what's gotten better at an even rapid pace is the power of the computer. And so it's able to do that. So, Bernie, this has been a great discussion. Thanks for taking time to chat with us. We're going to have a link on to the IT Buyer's Guide, IT Buyer's Guide to Docking Stations for 2025. Sorry, misspoke there. And we'll have that in the show notes. Again, even if you're not looking to buy right now, it's a good thing just to bookmark. It's a good refresher on like, okay, because there's, in some ways, it's like the, We had 14 different types of cables, so we now have one standard. So we now have 15 standards. It's one of those. Like there's still a lot of caveat here, and even inside of the USB and Thunderbolt, like there's, as you said, there's in some ways like little microcomputers that are happening inside those cables. So there's often more that meets to these cables, and that's why it matters what you buy. So again, thanks everybody for listening this week. Check the show notes for the link. Good thing to bookmark for the future, and we'll talk to everybody next week.
Thank you, Brad.